Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, MeQ is a credit union, not just a bank, which means it belongs to you, and you get stuff back in the end that belongs to you, that you want. For more information, go to www.mecu.com, or you can click on their banner at steinershow.org. We're about to have another one of our Urbanite Radio stories, this Urbanite Radio conversation, written by David Dudley. David Dudley used to be the editor of Urbanite magazine. He's now editor of AARP's magazine, and he commutes to Washington, D.C. from Baltimore. He wrote the article, Our Better Half, in the January issue. Just 40 miles from downtown Baltimore, there's a recession-proof, job-creating, and force of invulnerable economic well-being. Why can't we get a bigger piece of the D.C. action? Well, it's more than about that. It's about lives of commuting, what that all means. We're also joined in studio by Dr. Glenn Robinson, professor at Morgan State University's School of Engineering. Is that right?
School of Engineering and Institute for Urban Research.
Institute for Urban Research, where he is one of the experts on traffic and transportation.
And environmental justice.
And environmental justice, which means we should have you a great deal more on the show talking about environmental justice.
Sure.
Dante Cini is with us. Dante Cini is a journalist, author of the book Our Patchwork Nation, and a resident of Washington, D.C., who was quoted in the article. And Dante, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, David Dudley, let me start with you.
Yes, Mark, how are you?
So you may have started this ruckus with this article.
Yes, I did. And I should correct you first. I'm not the editor of AARP, the magazine.
An editor.
There are many. And there are many larger ones than I. But and I should also stress I wrote this as a freelancer, and
yes,
the views contained herein do not reflect those of the organization I work for in my day job.
So having said all that,
yes,
all the clarifications, not to get in trouble, not to lose your job. We don't want that to happen.
Not this week.
Or you will no longer be a commuter.
Yeah, well, there is an upside to that, I suppose.
So tell us in Australia, so what the gist and heart of what you're trying to say here.
The gist of this was after a year and a half where I'd been sort of joining this diaspora of people who live in Baltimore and work in Washington, and you know, I ride on the commuter train, the MARC train. You have a lot of time to think about these things when you're sitting there for an hour each way, and it struck me, as I'm sure it strikes a lot of people in that situation, why it is that the economic vitality we see when we get off at Union Station in Washington doesn't travel further down the rail lines into Baltimore City, when in fact, you know, these are two cities that are so physically close and should by all rights have a lot of economic ties and sort of cultural ties and philosophical ties. It always strikes me how odd it is that they remain so separate, even though that we are on paper a mega region and have known this for decades. And from an economic development perspective, you know, it's long been known that our at least Baltimore's economic fates are at least partially intertwined with that of the federal government, and it just struck me as a striking kind of divide that was really larger than just the geographic one.
In my sense, that Robinson, as you read the article, your sense of divide may have gone a different direction.
Well, yeah. when I first read the article, I thought it was, you know, interesting, and of course, I wondered, you know, who had written it. And whether the person was, you know, from Baltimore, and what they were actually trying to, what point they were trying to make, you know, with the article. As I jokingly commented in the lobby, I said, this was a guy that probably wanted to, you know, was tired of commuting and wanted to have shorter commute times by having a, you know, federal agency in a city that he could work in. But when I think of, you know, all jokes aside, when I think about Baltimore and creating more energy, you know, through the relocation of a city agency or a federal agency, I wonder what the impact of that would be, you know, in the city. And where would they relocate it? Would it even get to the city? Would it wind up being in one of the counties? And would that, you know, increase the congestion problems? How would it impact the housing? As he said, on paper, Baltimore has a large number of vacant houses, you know, that, you know, could be used, you know, for residential or, you know, or commercial. But I'm not sure that the power structure here is thinking about that. You know, I think they're more concerned right now with many of the disparity issues that are in the city.
And Dante Chinney, folks, we want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. I'm really curious also, as we get into some of these commuting questions about your life as a commuter and these systems that don't really lend themselves to being people being commuters, 410-319-8888. And tell me how your work, Patchwork Nation, and the theory about that fits into all this.
Well, actually, in terms of Patchwork Nation, Washington and Baltimore are, you know, the same type of community is the way I break them down. I mean, we break all the counties in the U.S., and that includes cities that are sometimes counties that are counties as well, into 12 different types of place. And they both fall in this category we call industrial metropolis. And those are just essentially big, kind of dense places with a lot of everything, a lot of wealth, a lot of poverty, high education rates, low education rates, you know, basically places where you get to see both ends of America and everything in between all together. And they actually, you know, they do fit fairly well into that. I live in Upper Northwest Washington, which is, Washington's a pretty complicated place. I mean, Upper Northwest Washington is very different from Capitol Hill, is very different from Southeast. I mean, it's a very complicated city. But Baltimore, from my limited dealings with it, does have some of the same elements. There are wealthy parts of Baltimore. I have friends who do the same commute that David does. I have a good friend who works at the Christian Science Monitor. His wife works in Wilmington, and he works in Washington, so they live in Baltimore. And he talks about the neighborhood he lives in. It's a wonderful town. It's a wonderful place to live. And there are obviously places in Baltimore that aren't so great. So it actually fits well into being this thing we call the industrial metropolis. But all an industrial metropolis in Patchwork Nation means is a place that's big, diverse, and very complicated.
So, I mean, as I was reading the article, one of the things that struck me was there are two elements to this. One has to do with the transportation system that moves people back and forth, that doesn't do an awfully incredibly good job of doing it.
Yeah, one of my points is that one would think that it would be more effective given the size of these two cities, the fact that they're only 40-something miles apart.
Right.
And looking at other twin cities that are these sort of binary systems, it seems like there hasn't been a tremendous degree of coordination between the two ruling bodies of Baltimore and Washington, but which again is not exactly breaking news. It's just until you live it every day for 2.5 hours, it becomes more concrete in a way.
I mean, I were you going to say something, Lynn? I look at like the MARC system, then we go to our first caller, Andrea. Hold on, I want to come to your call right away. But you look at the MARC train. It's a train that could connect these two communities in a very huge way, but it doesn't run very well on weekends, doesn't run on holidays, doesn't run on federal holidays, doesn't run in the evening, doesn't run, you know, people could go back and forth to D.C. All the time if they could use a MARC train in a more effective way. It's slow.
It's actually fast if you get a good crosswind. One of the things I learned about it is that it actually is one of the faster, it's top speed because it's running on fairly upgraded Amtrak tracks, and of course Amtrak actually runs the system. The speeds if you get an express, it's quite swift. What it doesn't do is that it doesn't work very well for non-traditional workers. If you work a 9-to-5 commute, it's quite effective. If you need to be in at 3 p.m. or you need to work late after 9:00, it becomes very difficult, and that really does limit its usefulness for people who aren't engaged in "quote unquote" traditional occupations,
and in fact, our transportation
and Orioles games also. I'd add.
Yes, and Orioles games.
And also, I think, Glenn, that our transportation system here, especially in Baltimore, is really not doesn't see, even though most of the people taking our public transportation system in this community are working class people, it doesn't really work for working class people.
Well, I don't want to offend any of my friends who maybe recognize my voice, but, you know, transit in Baltimore, you know, is not, you know, there's a great bus system, but as you said, it doesn't work well, you know, for it works well during the peak hour. It doesn't work well, you know, on the off peak hour. And the defense for that would be that, you know, there's not a lot of people, there's not a lot of demand for it, you know, on off peak hours, especially, you know, at late at night. But typically people would say, what's wrong with, you know, Baltimore, or what do you need to do to attract folks from Washington into Baltimore? Well, you know, the rap on Baltimore is that, you know, there's a lack of access to healthy neighborhoods, lack of access to efficient transportation, which we just talked about a little bit. There's a lack of access to upwardly mobile employment, okay, and as well as, you know, high-performing schools. So if we want to, you know, expand this conversation away from, you know, to include, you know, what you need to do to entice people, you know, from Washington into Baltimore, okay, I think that, you know, you really have to address some of those areas where there are, you know, deficiencies. And Baltimore is a, some people say it's a tale of two cities or, you know, three cities. You have the Inner Harbor. You know, if you go down to Landmark to go to the movies, it's, you know, it's like going out to Columbia. I mean, you know, you know, you if you on Greenmount Avenue and or just, you know, between 25th Street and, or I don't know, let's say, 25th or 33rd and, right. You know, 25th and North Avenue. I mean, there's you know, it's a dying area. It's not exactly dying, but it's a sick area, and it needs some, you know, treatments. And then, so that's one, that's the second city. The third city would be just out there at that ribbon at, 33rd and Northern Parkway, you know, or closer to Northern Parkway, the, you know, Baltimore City line, you know, where Belvedere Square, and it's, you know, it's very nice up there. So until you solve those problems, you know, by creating a better distribution of areas like that in city, you know, inside the city, you know, people are going to not want to come here, and the people who live here are going to be afraid of being displaced.
Let me open the phones at 410-319-8888. And Andrea, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Andrea.
Well, this is my daily call in, and I call in every day because I'm a commuter. I work in, like, right outside D.C. in Virginia. And so, yeah, I have a long commute, and it's miserable. Like, I've tried so many things. Like, I've tried the train. No. Because I live in a county, I had to catch a bus to catch a train. Then I would catch a train, and then I had to catch another train, then a bus. So,
that's what you call a multimodal commute.
Yeah.
And you want to avoid those.
Yeah, so, you know, I was like, okay, maybe this will be less stressful because we know, like, the traffic, no matter, like, if you hit 295, if you don't hit it just right, you can be there. My commute can turn into 3 hours going and 3 hours coming. And some days I just really get frustrated because I'm like, oh, my God, I just spent, like, almost the same amount of time driving as I do working.
And so, where do you live?
Which way do you go?
Well, I tried different ways because I just hate the traffic. I actually live in the county. I live in Dundalk.
Uh huh.
And so, if I get up on, if I decide that I want to go to work early, because I typically have to be at work by 7:30. So if I decide, okay, I'm going to be ambitious, I'll get up at 4 and hit the road by 4:30. Obviously, no traffic. Life is good, and my commute is 45 minutes. But who wants to get up at like 4 in the morning every day? This is sitting in the parking lot. I mean, you know, there's only so much extra work.
So, wait, what do you do?
I work as a resource director for Fairfax County.
Whew.
Yeah, like, I love to work for Baltimore school system. Like, I do on the weekends,
uh-huh.
But not directly for the schools. I work for a counseling company on the weekends because, and that's the problem. Like, Baltimore City doesn't want to pay. And then, okay, so you sacrifice to pay. But they're not flexible in, like, your creativity. And it's like, okay, if you work in counseling and I'm a resource director trying to help teachers educate kids, and sometimes you got to be able to move and move outside the box. So then that goes kind of back into that dynamic where you guys were mentioning about people maybe coming over. And I think, you know, Baltimore City has, like, the potential of every major metropolis. But then when you actually get here, you're like, wait a minute. You kind of think, okay, wait a minute. Again, I'm from what you would consider a small town, but we're far more advanced. So it's like, okay, what's wrong with this picture? Even my dad's little country town in little bitty Texas is like.
So where are you from? Baltimore. What small town are you from?
I'm actually from Oklahoma. My father has a little ranch in a little town called DeBary, Texas. But you can get around DeBary, Texas, into Dallas, Houston, Louisiana, which is 15 minutes away, without any problems. But it's like here, you know, just like you're saying, the train is very kind of limited. The buses are pretty, you know, if you live in the city, life is great. And, you know, I'm lined up. I'm ready for a great job in the city.
Well, Angela, let me, I mean, I think that this is real. I mean, I think that the transportation system getting people to and from places in this town is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you look at, I mean, nothing's connected to anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, the subway is not connected to the light rail, not connected to the buses, and they don't stop at the same place.
That is a story unto itself. And you know, the one that which the magazine Urbanite has dealt with a couple times is sort of what on earth was the guiding logic between sort of paralleling your light rail and your subway lines for these, you know, it's a tangled and terrifying story. But the question your caller is struggling with is, you know, how much is my commute worth? And this is a question a lot of Americans are struggling with. And a couple of German economists actually tried to work this out a couple of years ago, and it was made a lot of stories. And their formula was that if your commute is an hour or more, you need to be making 40% more to overcome the kind of lifestyle stress that you're going to be accruing because of this. And if you're not making 40% more, you should find a job that pays that much less, much closer to home, because you'll feel happier. Your well-being will be commensurate. So we tend to undervalue the time it takes that we do this every day and the stress that it creates. And for a lot of people, economically, it doesn't really make sense. They'd be better off working a lower income job closer to home, and that's sort of the way the math works out, at least.
And how's that work out in reality for you, Glenn?
Well, I had two comments. The system is connected. It's just it's not well connected. So, you know, if you want to, you know, have access to all, you know, all the lines, you have to go down to Lexington Market. But I agree. And I'm not so sure about, you know, if I live close to work, that I should be penalized, okay, by a cut in salary, okay. Although I understand the point, mm-hmm. But you know, I spent quite a bit of time in East Lansing, you know, Michigan, where, you know, you're two blocks from downtown, you're half a block from the bus station, you know, you're 10 minutes from the country. And if you're in your car, you know, it only takes you, you know, 10 minutes or 15 minutes to get to wherever you want to go. And so I think those are values that, you know, that somehow we have to capture, okay, if we want to have a high quality of living, you know, in any city. And I always ask the question, if we're going to talk about, you know, creating more energy inside Baltimore by, I think the word was poaching jobs from, you know, the D.C. or even the surrounding counties, okay, we have to always ask the question or ask and answer the question, what will be the impact and how can we best mitigate, you know, those negative impacts and take advantage of the positives associated with that. But I think, you know, if I can get a high-paying job close to home, okay, then or a decent job close to home, I would take it. I grew up in Baltimore. My family is an East Baltimore family. We grew up on Homewood Avenue near in the St. Anne's Parish. And when I moved back from Lansing to Baltimore, I was hopping around from Columbia and you know, wherever I could find a place to sleep. And so I decided to rehab the house that we own in Baltimore, which is centrally located. Okay, it's 10 minutes from Morgan, 10 minutes from downtown. I mean, as close to 83, as close to 95. I mean, that's a perfect situation. The only problem was it was a rough neighborhood, okay? And the schools here, you know, were okay, but they were in decline. So I think if you can somehow bottle that, you know, and fix the neighborhoods, then you have a recipe where you can attract, you know, where you can do that job poaching, okay, without necessarily destroying the neighborhoods.
Dante?
Well, actually, I've spent a lot of time in East Lansing, too. That's where I went to school.
Quality dairy, huh? QD.
Yeah, I'm a fellow Spartan. So, you know, and it's you know, you talk about an atmosphere like that, that's just, like, the one thing I do, and I do this Patchwork Nation project is, you know, there these places where you can, these college towns, right, they're kind of, you're just never going to get that life. That's why everybody wants to live there.
Right, it's not going to happen.
Like, you get it all, right? You get the, you get some of the culture, you get, like, you know, semi-big-time sports, and you get the small-town community where you can walk to the coffee shop. That's great. And actually, it's somewhat affordable. You know, it's, if you can get the job, the housing is a heck of a lot cheaper than it is in Washington, or probably even, you know, in the nice parts of Baltimore. It's a heck of a lot cheaper in East Lansing, Michigan. But, you know, those places, they're special. And when you're dealing with the situation that we got, you know, in Baltimore and Washington, I mean, you're talking about the traffic problems aren't going to go away. There's too many people here. There are too many people. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest, so I can say this, and you can all throw whatever you want at me. There are too many people on the East Coast, and I've added to the problem by moving here. There are a lot of people here, and you know, rush hour. My God, man, they're all going everywhere. It's like, you know, there is a dominant flow of traffic, I guess. But when you get around Washington, and I think probably sometime and someone around Baltimore too, it's just cars going every which way, and it's tough. It's going to be hard to beat the traffic problem. I always think there's more money. I think it's a really interesting point. There's more money taking the job maybe in the city where you got to do the commute. But I agree. In the end, if it's me, I'd rather take the job for less money and not have to do the commute. I absolutely cannot stand traffic. I hate it. I absolutely hate it.
Well, I let me go back to the phones here because I refuse to do traffic.
Yeah.
I'm just lucky that I have a job where I don't have to deal with rush hour, and I won't. 410-319-8888, though I had to for years. Donald, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening, Donald.
Yes, I was listening. Came later on discussion, but I think I caught the good part of it.
Uh-huh.
Now, the way the city is operating as far as planning is concerned, the traffic is a mess. The transit system is just busted. I stopped driving because I paid last year about $3,500 getting my front end repaired, and not going to do it again. So my driving is limited. I do public transportation, but I live in Northeast Baltimore. It takes me, I'm usually at work 8 o'clock in the morning. I have to be on a bus stop at 6:45. It takes me almost 2 hours to get from Northeast to South Baltimore. And the way the city is being planned is backwards, because if you want to draw and attract people to Baltimore City, you don't make it better for people to come in. You make it better. You will attract people coming into Baltimore City by making Baltimore City better for the residents that live in Baltimore City, opposed to trying to push them out to bring some new people in. It's not working, and it's not going to be productive for those who, and not just that, it's going to push a lot of people out, because as you do development and more development, it's like what's happening over in East Baltimore. The people that moved out of there never be able to move back in. $200,000 houses. They're not going to be able to move in. You look in West Baltimore, you see the same thing happen, and we know what's going to happen in Park Heights. It's going to be gentrified. They're clearing the people out of Park Heights. So there's a resentment that people do have, residents who, long-term residents, that they have in Baltimore City as far as the direction that the city is going in right now. We understand of the clusters of high poverty in this area. Over the 9th Council Medic District, almost 50% of the residents are renters. Red Line come through, it's going to push them right on out. Park Heights, they doing a whole other thing with the renters on. So there has to be some kind of balance. And at this point, we don't see that balance. We see a push of the poor out of the city to regentrify for another culture, and another group of people coming in. Well, could you address that?
Donald, I think you raised some really interesting points. I'm going to bring them up when we come back. And
yes,
AC,
sir.
You're the next caller up. Claudia, you come right after AC. And I like to tackle some of these things, what he said, because we have maybe the trouble with Baltimore and Washington and places, we look in the wrong places. Maybe we should look to places like Bogota, Colombia, with the solution to our transportation problems. I'll bring that up when we come back. Stay with us and don't go away. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. First and second home buyers can find affordable homes in the city. Call 1-800-638-7781. A new program. And I also remind you all that WEAA invites you to the opening reception of our Zimbabwe Shona Stone Exhibition, Saturday, January 21st, 4 to 8 p.m. at our WEAA studios. There will be a gallery talk at 6 o'clock. The exhibition is a courtesy of Zimbabwe Gallery. Colin L. Thompson is the owner. Beverly Carter and Lewis Hudnell are the curators. The exhibition runs through the end of February. For more information, you can call 443-885-3564 or go to weaa.org. And as our in-studio guests can attest to, they've seen these incredible statues outside and encourage you all to come meet the curators and just look at this incredible exhibit of modern Zimbabwean art.
Yes, I do.
And that's the Dr. Glenn Robinson, professor, Morgan State University Urban Studies Institute. Did I say that right? Not Urban Studies. Yes.
It's Institute for Urban Studies.
Institute for Urban Studies. Thank you. My dyslexic way. Who joins us here in studio, David Dudley, who wrote the article for Urbanite Magazine, Our Better Half, in the January issue of Urbanite Magazine. He's a former editor of that magazine. Dante Chinney wrote the book Our Patchwork Nation as a resident of Washington, D.C. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Well, we're losing some of our callers, so before I go to Bogota, not Bogota, as I said earlier, Bogota, Colombia, let me go to Claudia. You're on the air. Hi, Claudia, you're on the air.
Hi.
Welcome,
Mark.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I speak from some experience on this. I commuted from Baltimore to Washington for 11 years, and commuting was in my blood. I was raised in New York City, which has a culture of public transportation.
Right.
And Washington is a mecca of higher-paying jobs that are critical to the tax base of Baltimore in all job classifications. If you're a lawyer, you make more money in Washington, but guess what? If you sweep floors, you make more money in Washington. So in thinking about Baltimore City, you have to think of the adjoining Washington metropolitan area when thinking about Baltimore City and growth and revenues and incomes. And the lack of transit within Baltimore has such a huge impact on the poor. I mean, a gentleman spoke before me about it taking 2 hours, you know, to go from one section of Baltimore to another. I know a woman who commutes to D.C. every day. In the amount of time that it takes her solely on public transportation because she has no car, the amount of time it takes her to get from North Baltimore to her office in Washington, I could get to Chicago. And we have, literally, and that's going through screening. So we have to address this internal transit issue too. And I think part of that is it's a cultural issue. People are used to their cars. You know, a lot of Baltimoreans talk about wanting Red Line and wanting better thought out transit, but when brass tacks comes along, NIMBY groups are there. People are afraid to ride buses. They're afraid to ride the light rail. So I worry because the problem is also cultural. And that's really all I had to say.
Claudia, thank you.
It's also a good point that you know, when we talk about the tax incentives that are being proffered to us now, they tend to be going towards car drivers and not public transit commuters. So if you're trying to write off your commuting expenses these days, it's easier to do it for driving expenses. There are you know, forces at work that are actively encouraging more people to get on the roads.
Well, I mean, before Eric, hold on a moment here. He lived in D.C. and has now moved to Baltimore and made the other transition. I want to hear what he has to say. But let me raise the issue that had to do with what Claudia said and our former caller and what we've been talking about here. This goes to the sense of community and to transit. And the reason I think of Bogota, Colombia, is because what they've done there, rather than build a red line that is not going to go any faster than a bus, unless it's underground, because you can't go tearing through the city streets, mm-hmm. Which why has made no sense to me to build this thing above ground at all. If you're going to build rapid transit by rail, and you put it underground so it can really move, or up above, but we won't do that. What they did was made high-speed hybrid buses that move through the city of Bogota, have lanes, and the people get on, have to get up on platforms. The doors open there, they get in, and they attach the buses going to the other parts of the city with parking lots where people can park their cars, or they put their bicycles or bring their bicycles onto the transit, and they create a system that actually functions. And they have neighborhoods. And you were saying earlier, we were talking about neighborhoods, and I see you were telling earlier about, no, it was Dante was saying earlier about East Lansing, Michigan, and be able to go to coffee houses. Well, Baltimore was that city. Mm-hmm. Everything was connected by a trolley, and every neighborhood had a commercial district where you had a restaurant, a coffee shop, a movie theater, a shoe store. So you may not be able to reinvent all that stuff because of the modern world and shopping centers, but they had centers where people went to, mm-hmm. pool halls, bowling alleys, and everybody had places they could walk to in like a 12, 14-block radius. Right?
Very true.
Or 20-block radius. So those things can happen.
Oh, absolutely.
But the question is where you want to put the investment, but we choose to do it in a different way. It would take, to me, a generation to kind of move us from cars to back to rail, or back to buses, I should say. But I don't think it's totally impossible over a period of time, depending on where you invest the money in society.
It is. I mean, it's a question of where your zoning laws are encouraging that process happening. There are neighborhoods in Baltimore today where that basically exists, where you can live and work and play in the same neighborhood. And that is, unfortunately, more or less an amenity for a handful of wealthy neighborhoods, not something that exists across the board. But it's utterly doable, and it's definitely the
And it did. Glenn.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then Dante, and then back to the bones.
Yeah, I wanted to comment on what Dante said. But I think you just did it. But it brings you back to a discussion on environmental justice and transportation. In Baltimore, you have areas, okay, that have that small town, fix. You got Charles Village, you got the Art District, you got, Belvedere Square. And then there are other areas, okay. And then you get into these deserts, okay, where they have plenty of housing. I mean, beautiful historical housing. It's just that nobody wants to go there because they're afraid of, being mugged, or they don't like their neighbors. Okay, but I suggest that those are areas that are at risk, and because of the land use policies or the way they're implemented or the nature of the political process, these areas are avoided and they're allowed to decline. But as Mark said, there was a day where we used to go to Miami Street to Anne Arundel ice cream and get ice cream cones on Sundays. Well, places like that are gone, but there is an effort, I think, it's a slow effort, to rebuild these areas. And I think that once they're rebuilt, okay, then Baltimore becomes a much more attractive place for people who live inside the city. And if it's attractive for me as a resident, okay, then it's going to be attractive to people, who, people will see that and will want to, taste that themselves. But, if you go back to the transit system, if there was a good line that ran outside of my house, okay, a quarter of a mile, and it took me to where I want to go, I would take it. But typically, if I have to walk a quarter mile to get to the bus, I have to walk a quarter mile after I get off the bus. And so it's just easier to drive.
Right. If the white snail would actually move, I would take it.
Well, I was thinking of that.
But Dante, you were trying to say something. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the problem, the things you're talking about in Baltimore and what you used to have there, that's the story of American cities everywhere.
It is.
I grew up outside Detroit. It's depressing. I mean, I see where my father once lived, and he talked about what it was like when he was young. It's all gone. And I just think the thing you really have to do is you need the transit stuff too, but the what's working against you that really makes it hard is not just the transit, but it's the economics of it now. It's making those small stores work and who they've got to compete against when it comes to Walmart setting up in the edge of town. And I can't tell you how many towns I go to in the United States where there's a rotted out urban core, even small towns, And then you drive out, and there's this strip where there's a Walmart, and a couple of other big box, maybe a Best Buy, big box stores. What we want to get back, and what you're talking about getting back, and what I love, is really hard. It's going to be
it's very hard
to get that stuff back.
But, you know, even in Detroit, I have my Michigan hat on right now. But there are a lot of kids, you know, who graduated from East Lansing High School who have, you know, joined the Vista programs or the AmeriCorps programs, and they've moved to Detroit, and they're building these soccer, they're building these communities, you know, where they have, like, soccer leagues. If East Lansing had 20 soccer teams, well, now you find the same 20 soccer teams in Detroit, and they're competing and against each other. And they're building gardens, and, you know, they're growing their own food, and they're involving themselves in the community. And those neighborhoods are trying to turn around.
Oh, it's fascinating.
You know,
what's going on in Detroit is fascinating right now.
Right, right. And so it's the same
fight, but it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and what you're saying is right. It's difficult. It's hard. We want it back because it was a good life. And the life that we're facing today is not as appealing. Now, I don't always get into my car and ride to Belvedere Square to get a head of cabbage.
Expensive head of cabbage. 410-319-8888. And that's another issue we deal with here. Eric, I'm sorry we missed your call. Call back. I'd like to hear about why you moved to Baltimore. Donna, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Donna. Welcome.
Pretty good. How you doing, Mark?
Very well. Welcome.
As a person with a transportation background myself and who was trained as a planner at Morgan, one of the things we did learn was that back in the 40s, I guess the name about 40 years ago, D.C., Montgomery County and them came. They had a team of people that wanted to, you know, create a mass transit system, which is the subway you see in D.C. and Virginia. And Baltimore said no. So if we had followed and went along with them, we would have had the same transportation system that D.C. and the Virginia area has. And the problem in Baltimore, and I see it in other counties that are predominantly white, is the fear that crime is going to follow if you expand the transportation system around. And I heard it in Baltimore. I heard it in Chevy Chase. I heard it. And I'm sitting here like, for instance, when the light rail was made in Timonium Hunt Valley, they didn't want to stop there. They deliberately said, we don't want to stop because we don't want to bring unsavory people to the out in Hunt Valley. So 10 years later, more progressive people went there and said, why don't we have a stop? And, of course, the Mass Transit Administration said, okay, well, we'll put a stop there. They put systems in place so just in case 10 years down the road, they would eventually, people would come around. And that group did come around, and eventually they did have a stop out at the mall. But it's the climate and the problems in the city, not in just the city, but in the county, Anne Arundel County. We could have had a line go from Baltimore City to New Carrollton, and that was waffled around. So we could have an excellent mass transit system, but you have our surrounding counties, Harford County, Anne Arundel, parts of Baltimore County, say we don't want those poor people coming in our communities because the poor people in Baltimore City seem to get blamed for every little thing that happens. My porch furniture gets stolen. That's still a problem in Linthicum. They keep saying the same thing. When furniture gets stolen, it's black people or poor people in the city getting on, coming in their neighborhood.
That's because they're listening to Newt Gingrich.
Right. So the point I'm making with my training, we have that segregation, Jim Crow thinking, not only in Baltimore, but in our surrounding county, Harford, Cecil, whatever. So we have commuter buses.
Right.
And so we have to, and I've recommended this many times, we have to get social scientists involved to get out of this, get the people to start thinking more broad and not, I don't want those people coming. Because every time they expand a system, they keep thinking poor people going to run out there and commit crime.
All right, Donna, we appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I think that's one of the reasons that Ruxton doesn't have a stop on the subway line in Baltimore, and Georgetown doesn't have a stop on the subway line in D.C.
Those are the two examples that leap to mind. And I don't know if the culture that your caller mentions is changing. I think it is. I think there will come a point, if not this decade, then perhaps the next, when people in Ruxton will think, why isn't there a stop here? Why does this train just blow right by us? And I think people are beginning to understand that the transit can be an amenity that they will worth that is worth paying for, and you see it in housing values, especially in the D.C. area, of course, where you know housing that is walking distance to a metro stop is worth far more than housing that's outside that. So you see a reversal of the fear that I think made Baltimore make some very bad transit decisions in generations past.
You know, we've seen, Dante, you can comment on this, we've seen Republican Governor Bob Ehrlich suggested that we might need high street transit buses because of the cost these days of building rail rather than rail. And that may be the way that we need to think about the future transportation goes, because I'm not so sure that we're willing to put up the billions of dollars it costs.
I don't think we have the billions of dollars anymore. I think my unofficial, non-expert sense is that that window has closed. And fixed rail is so incredibly expensive now. And not to mention putting things underground, you know, it's just so horrendously pricey that we may that ship has sailed. I think.
I think it has.
We have to think of alternatives.
Dante,
I agree. I mean, it is amazing here that Georgetown, you know, because they have talked about extending the metro lines all around Washington D.C. and Georgetown desperately wants a line now.
Right.
And they maintain that was never why they didn't want.
Of course
not. They have a bunch of reasons why they couldn't have a line, but it had nothing to do with that. But of course, it had everything to do with that. And you know, it's. The thing is, if you're lucky and if you had those NIMBY people that kept that stuff out, I think you're right. You're out of luck because, you know, it's actually we've seen some of this stuff happen in the last year with Florida and Ohio, mm-hmm. where you had governors who turned down money to build rail lines, and they've faced some nasty rebukes from the people in those communities because you don't turn down infrastructure, you don't turn down transportation infrastructure. It's just a foolish thing to do.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888, one of our urban magazine radio discussions. What do I do for a living? Bobby, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Bobby. Welcome.
Thank you. I haven't called in a while, so it's just amazing to actually catch your program. But being a lifelong resident of Baltimore City, I just wanted to add that if I had to choose to live in Baltimore, I wouldn't, because to me it's not a livable city. And the reason why I say that is because if you make less than $60,000 a year, you're literally going to struggle when it comes with housing and especially transportation, because our mass transit literally doesn't go anywhere. And, Mark, I work in the wealthiest neighborhood in Baltimore, which is Roland Park.
Uh-huh.
And if I wanted to catch the transit to get to work, I would have to leave out at 5 a.m., come downtown, and then wait for a bus that runs every hour just to get to work in time to be late. I mean, things have to change. I mean, I don't understand how we claim to be such a progressive city and you still can't get anywhere. And they're not parked downtown because either you won't have a car or you'll be flat with a really huge ticket. So, I mean, what do you really do? You move to the suburbs. Just wanted to add that.
Well, it's particularly ironic because, of course, Roland Park was a quote-unquote streetcar suburb. You know, it exists because of mass transit.
Right.
And it was designed as a place that would be reachable and would be an access. and, of course, the streetcars don't exist. The commute that some of these people are mentioning would have probably been faster 100 years ago.
Less. I mean, I'm old enough to remember streetcars that took you from one end of Baltimore to the next. Glenn?
Well, I mean, all of this conversation goes back, you know, to the point that we just don't have a lot of transit choices, you know, in the city. The ones that we have, you know, are not that good. And there's no way that we're going to, you know, bring in, you know, this energy from, you know, D.C. and, you know, the surrounding counties until we get it. You know, I mean, I don't think that's a total answer, but I think that's a very important part of it. Otherwise, we're going to drive our cars and stay away from Green Mountain North and continue to do what we've been doing.
So I wonder, you know, when you think about these things, Dante, if there's a way to build both transit that makes sense and have the community that people desire, which is one of the reasons some people move from D.C. to Baltimore, is for that sense of community.
Right. And I think the other thing that's really a critical element of this is that, you know, what we're talking about doing here, what we're really talking about trying to bring to some of these places, there are all these stages in it, right? That the first stage is you have to have the transportation, and you have to kind of make it nice for the young hipsters, right, for them to move in. then once the people have the kids, you have to find a way to improve the schools to keep them there for the families, which is actually a problem here in the District of Columbia that we're experiencing a little. And how do you do it? I don't know. The thing is, the mass transit is just so key, because once it's there, it's one of the reasons I'm convinced. I mean, there's a lot of reasons New York is what New York is. But one of the reasons New York was able to reinvent itself so easily and so often is because of the mass transit system. It really makes that place what it is. That's the key. That's the first step. You have to find a way, for what you guys are doing within Baltimore, you have to find some way because that's just the very first step, is building the transportation. We all want things to happen immediately, and it's a long process. And the first step is you get the transportation in place, and then you can talk about all the other stuff you got to do to make it all work.
Well, I was going to say, it takes you back to my opening comments. You got to improve access to healthy neighborhoods.
Yep.
You got to improve access to transportation. You got to improve access to employment for high paying jobs, and you got to improve access to high performing education.
One of the things I wanted to sort of stress in the piece I wrote was that our jobs reflect a certain choice we all make, and we do the math in our heads about how important is it to me to be home to put my kids to bed, or how important is it to me to make 40% more this year than I did last year. And it's a painful process. And the choice I made was, calculating to a degree, but I chose to remain in Baltimore and live here because I value the sense of community it has offered. I had opportunities. I moved away for a time and lived in one of those college towns that always shows up at the top of surveys of livability, Ithaca, New York, which has the highest rate of people walking to work in North America. And it was a lovely place to walk to work, and had that elusive work-life balance was very much a part of the lifestyle there. But I chose to come back to Baltimore because I thought it was a more vibrant place and there were more options, and I missed the people I used to live with here. And what people value about the city is something that a lot of people were worth making other sacrifices for. And for me, the sacrifice is, a certain amount of my life is now going to be spent in this interval called commuting, which is, at the moment makes sense. But wouldn't it be nice as a thought experiment if you could have the lifestyle and the career that you desired in the same, circumscribed by the same area? And that's something I think we have some work to do on.
I think there are at-risk communities inside Baltimore, some of these deserts, that have tremendous values, but they need targeted actions to get the engine of progress and growth started, and that requires some thinking that would say, well, we've done enough subsidy in the harbor, it's time to balance that out by putting it in some of the areas that haven't had it for 10-20 years and allow something to happen there.
Dante?
Yeah, I think those are both really interesting points. I mean, I have been lucky enough to be able to live in Washington, D.C., close to where I work and close to a metro, because I bought when things were cheap, and there's no way I could afford to live here now. I completely lucked out. And to me, The hard part, like I say, the hard part is you got to build it brick by brick and piece by piece, like you're saying. And I think you start with the transit. And I think you're definitely right about Baltimore. Look, you've got what you needed out of the Inner Harbor now. Okay, it's there. Fine. It's time to start spreading that money around and connecting stuff up. I mean, look, I do pay very close attention to Detroit, and I watch what they're trying to do there, and they're trying to connect the disparate parts of it, because
right.
Different, decent, nice parts of Detroit, but it really does take very strategic thinking. And it's you're right. In Baltimore, it's time to let the Inner Harbor can fly on its own now. Take it someplace else.
Right. We can stop doing all the pilots and tips in the Inner Harbor and start putting them out in people's neighborhoods to create a different landscape.
Exactly. Exactly. It can make a big difference. Imagine if you had a new employment center. anywhere in the middle of East Baltimore, okay, outside of the John Hopkins sphere, okay, just think what it would do. You know, it would change the whole character. It would be some displacement, but it wouldn't be a complete displacement. You know, people would be able to find jobs. It would be like I could walk around a corner and get a job. And when we moved to Homewood Avenue, it was a light industrial area. It still is. Okay, you know, Robbins, food distribution. One of my first jobs as a, you know, before I was in the 12th grade was working in places like that. But it's hard to find that now in Baltimore. And that's what Baltimore needs.
Well, I think that's the kind of dialogue we're going to try to have in this program over the next year. Are kind of imagining the city, imagining what it could be, thinking about the things that would make it work, and how to get. But in very practical terms, how to get people there, and how to get people back to work, and how to get it moving once again. And yeah. I don't think it's impossible.
Anthony Downs has a book out called "Stuck in Traffic," it's third edition, and basically he makes the argument that we were all making. You know, we cannot relieve congestion with more automobiles and more roads. We need transit. And still we'll have congestion.
And still we'll have congestion.
But it won't be, but it'll be more tolerable.
Congestion is a way of life. First of all, David.
Well,
Dully,
you can think of it as congestion. You can think of it as other people. You can think of it as, you know, part of what we all like about
vibrancy.
Cities is vibrancy. Exactly. contacting our fellow people what we need to do is sort of, you know, circumscribe this part of our lives so it doesn't completely take it over.
David Dully, thank you for writing the article, Our Better Half, and this month's Urbanite, former editor of Urbanite magazine, Glenn Robinson, professor here at Morgan State University, Dante Cheney, author of Our Patchwork Nation. Thank all three of you for being in the studio. It's been great to have you here.
Thanks very much for having me.
And
thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This has been one of our Urbanite radio stories. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Cricket Aronson. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. We're engineered today by Zachary Coleman. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and find out about our guests and the work that they do, please join us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care and stay out of traffic.